time with Uncaged.
Welcome to Topple Uncaged. I'm Steve Topple and you're locked on to the UK's hottest politics and music podcast. Each week, I bring you the rawest takes on the big stories making the news, always joined by a very special guest. Then, I pleasure your mind, body and soul with the freshest, most banging international music going. If I was the superstitious type, I should have been stumbling across a load of four-leaf clovers with my guest I got on this week, because it is an absolute pleasure to have him on Topple Uncaged. If you think you knew the meaning of the word innovative, think again, because this guest blasted it into the stratosphere. Check this out. I'm proud, but I'm also a bit humbled, really, that my musical guests on my podcast, for me, are always exceptional talents. My girlfriend moans at me because she thinks I lavish a bit too much praise on people, but it's because all the artists that come on here are, in my opinion, absolutely fantastic with some staggeringly good music behind them. And my guest this week is no exception. He released an EP in 2017. He is now back with a full album, and oh my gosh, it is amazing. I'm very, very excited to have this guest on and speak to him, because his album, The Immortal Stepper, is absolutely fantastic. It is Black Hero. Black Hero, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's really, really exciting to have you here.
Yeah, man, bless you. I'm really excited to be here. Like, this platform, I was doing my research and I love the type of talents that you guys interview. All the people that I listen to personally. So to be here, I feel like, yeah, I've made it. Like,
That is the best compliment I've ever had. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm blushing this end.
Yeah, man. Because King Mas, Indy Allen, and my brother, and all the acts of Mr. Common, there are people me genuinely like mess with. So it's a very good vibe.
Both of those guys are fantastic. Yeah, King Mas and Indy are fantastic. They're both excellent. But so are you fantastic with your latest album, well, new album and first album, Immortal Stepper. I'm not sure where to begin with this, really. The first thing that sprung out to me listening to the whole thing as a complete project, and don't take this the wrong way, and if you don't like it, say, but it immediately put me in mind of Prince and the Power Generation. However, what you've done is brought it up to 2019. I mean that in terms of the fact it is such an experimental, firstly, album in terms of musical genres, which we'll get into in a bit. Also, your vocals are absolutely fantastic. You are such a talented singer. The way you flip from the tenor to the falsetto and back again, and that funky kind of influence with the vocals, that's amazing. And also, the musical arrangements are absolutely stunning. I mean, how does that sum it up for you? I mean, like I say, for me, it's very experimental, and it's like you've brought Prince and his legacy and what he did in the sort of 80s and 90s bang up to date. Is that, would you say it's a fair appraisal? Am I a bit on the money?
It's almost on point. Like, definitely on point. I wasn't thinking of Prince, though, like, for sure. Like,
who are you thinking of?
Yeah, it's in that element. Like, I was like, my influences around this project are just generally in life is like Michael Jackson, Kirk Franklin, like Elizabeth and Nina Simone energy, a little bit of like Fitzgerald, a little bit of just like old mixed with, you know, like, so it's still on point, but you said for sure, definitely experimental in the sense of we were thinking like, what's going to be our first album through the door, me and my team, me and the producers, me and the people I rock with, like, what would we want this first project to sound like? And I think what we did that really made it come together properly was not put any defining thing on it. Like, we weren't going for a specific song, but just like to like still have it nostalgic. So it's not like we were directly going for Prince or directly going for MJ. It just happened. Like, there's a song called Mary. I didn't even really listen to Michael Jackson's song called Butterflies until my engineer said, "Yo, you know what this sound like?" I'm like, "No, what it sound like?" And he's like, "Yo, listen to this song." And he played it. I was like, "Oh, it'll give you butterflies inside." Oh, yo, I didn't even really meds that, isn't it? So it's like these things were just happening naturally, organically. Like, the old soul inside of me was just bringing forth the stuff that I was growing up on. So I'd say the album is just a collage of everything I've learned, all the music I've listened to over just being in this world, and just adding my own energy to it. So that was really the album. So definitely experimental, definitely trying to show vocal range, to show that, you know, we have the highs, the lows, the mids, showcasing the producers in my space too as well. Like, these are all young producers, all Jamaican. I think one is not Jamaican, but everybody else is Jamaican. So that's 13 tracks that are different and all done by Jamaicans. So that's really what I really wanted to show, like, the space I'm in, who I'm around, who's in my generation right now, what we're doing. So I think, yeah, all across the board, I'm happy with the album that way. I think we accomplished what we wanted to do.
I think it's a brilliant, like, summing up of it, because you say it's a collage, and it is a collage. It's musically, for me, it's fascinating. You go from tracks like the opening track, Feet Don't Fail.
Feet don't fail me now, oh, as I trot along, yeah, battle's just begun. I know it's far from one,
which you've got this vocally extremely impressive voice on it, kind of husky, soulful, then you go almost onto full on kind of ballad, really. Tracks like Skydive.
So high, so high, get my new feet. Skydive, skydive, get my eyes. So dive, so dive, so high, frequency so high.
Ooh. Which are a definite kind of hip hop influence, herb, funky soul of the 70s.
Just me and the herb, early in the morning. Me and the herb, right before dawn. Me and the herb, youths calm down your nerves. Just me and the herb.
You take Stevie Wonder's, you take Stevie Wonder's Superstition and do your own thing with it.
Baby, Superstition.
There's elements of neo soul in tracks like Can I. Black Pepper was another one which stood out. It's kind of, I felt a bit kind of Afrobeat R&B.
Me give you black paper, black, black, black paper. Just a little bit, black paper, black, black, black paper. All she needs in
a, but it wasn't quite that, but there was a definite influence there. And then you kind of go into R&B with tracks like Get High and My Love.
It's
just musically, it's like I say, it's experimental, and especially Skydive particularly stood out for me, because I kind of, you had the hip hop drums going on, which are very recognizable.
The boom bap drums,
exactly. Yeah, that was going on, and then there were some elements I'd sort of heard bits of dub in there with the kind of synths that were going on, but also it was extremely futuristic. I mean, with regards to the musical styles on the album, you say it's just what's come from you and what you like and what you listen to, but the tracks that I couldn't define, especially Funk Out, that's another one I couldn't bracket that into anything at all. Where's this futuristic influence come from? What is your vision with smashing outside of normal genres, really, and heading into territory which is quite uncharted?
I guess always being, I directly attribute most of the stuff that I do to who I grew up and who I follow very closely. So being a huge Kanye West fan, especially the early catalog, I was really, really a fan, because he wasn't afraid to change the genres, go outside, mix and mingle the sounds, like work with different kind of artists outside of his bass genre. So I think that influence on me just left the impression, like, yo, I want to do that for my genre, for my country, for my people, for my song. So the futuristic thing just is just me over the years just wanting to do that, and it's just happening naturally. I swear to you, it's so organic. Like, Funk Out happened, like, I mean, my bridging was just the reason. It's like, you know, I have this beat. So it wasn't even like a beat that I planned to, like, use. It was just, he just played it, and I was like, yo, this is ridiculously different. Then the melodies came, and then the song came together just naturally with me and Blue. So it's like, I don't even have a sound for it. I feel like any sound that we can't define on the project, I'm just going to call it an immortal sound. It's like, that's like an immortal sound to me. But that's Funko. It's an immortal sound. It's very funky. The topic is very funky. It's up full, positive dancing vibes, but it's just so undefinable. Like, it's going to take a couple of years before people really say, yo, what this really is, or like, what it sounds like, isn't it? But songs like that, Black Pepper, yeah, man, them just different. Them just different. I have no name for them, no nothing. I hope the people find a name for it so I can start doing these interviews and be like, yeah, that's that sound, that sound. It's just natural, legit natural. I didn't even think of it like the future. To be honest, let me share the real. I had this project for like 3 years sitting on, like, being very frustrated with it. So even before it came out, I really thought nobody was going to understand what we were doing. And because I didn't even understand what we were doing. I'm like, no, it's not reggae. Oh, my God, it's not bubble. But then when we put it out, my whole, everything has changed. Like, the reaction to it really showed me that, one, the music I'm making is timeless. And two, because Herb is from 2012, 2013. Like, that's almost 7 years ago. Like, you get me? And songs on it are 5 years old, six, like 3 years old. So the music on it is really from my time before, and it's still able to connect now. So, yeah, like, that, I guess that's the future. I guess that we were making it for 2019.
That's a brilliant way that you've latched on to something really important there, because, again, it is timeless. Herb, especially, as you point out, was from years ago, and it has got this. I was immediately transported to that sort of 70s funky soul feeling.
Yeah, yeah. It's like that 70s show. It's like all the years of watching that 70s show just came out for a show.
Exactly, yeah. I wanted to put my flares on there and then. The whole album is timeless, and I think what you've done especially well is by creating, as you say, some sounds which you cannot define, you have therefore created something that will stand the test of time completely. I mean, what also, with the Immortal Stepper, what also stood out for me was there's a lot of African influence in there, from the musical arrangements to your choice of percussion and the way it's used. You can feel an African sort of feeling running through it. For example, Moving On, you've got Middle Eastern North African drums going on there.
I'm still moving on, I'm moving on. I said just another nomad appeal, just another king, you're melanin up in the building.
There's a real influence there. Was it important to you to include, if you did it consciously, to include the African kind of culture and the sound within the project?
Definitely was purposeful. And funny thing is, this is so weird. Everybody in that was around the making of this album, that's a part of it, their love for music, or what I should say is, Black music and African music connect to them a lot. So everybody in my team, that's their favorite music. That's what they listen to. So when they're making music, it's just natural. When I'm making music, it's just natural to always connect back to African music and Black music and all the stuff, that the songs that are out there for us to utilize, like jazz and soul and R&B, even gospel to a sense, isn't it? So I think what happened was, as I said, yeah, naturally it just happened. But with Moving On, that was purposeful, because I feel like I was really trying to go for a Negro spiritual kind of vibe, something where it wasn't really about a catchy hook, it was more about what I'm saying and the passion and the energy behind it, and it's purposefully put at the top of the project for a reason. Like, Feet Don't Fail and Moving On, they're placed there for a reason. Like, I want to start the album with that vibe, because I could have easily put the softer sounds and the more futuristic sounds. The sounds I know everybody would be like, oh my God, this is great, and would make people look at the project different probably, but just like, I guess, like Kanye, when you put, it was Yeezus, and you put On Site at first, which was just crazy, like distorted sounds and like show everybody off a bit. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to, like, yo, hit you with that hardcore message first, hardcore sounds first. And then even the sample that's in Moving On is planned, like, that's time back to Black music. I don't remember if it was Curtis Mayfield or somebody else who sampled that. Not sure. It's either them or the Manhattans, I believe. But yeah, one of them. And just to tie it back directly now to a specific Black sound, isn't it? So yeah, that was purposeful. All the spiritual messages, African messages, all the stuff like that within the project were purposefully done.
Yeah, it shows. And no, I think you were really on point to put Feet Don't Fail first, because like you say, it sets out what you're doing with the project as a whole. I mean, there's a brilliant line that stands out for me in that, which sheds some light on the system's fallacies, and that, again, that sums up so much of the Immortal Stepper project. There's social and political messages throughout it. As we say, you start off with Feet Don't Fail, you go on to Can I Show You, which it sounds like it's talking about the current situation in Jamaica with regards to of poverty and inequality. And then you go on to obviously Get High, where you're talking about legalization of cannabis. Was it important to you as much as doing an album which was musically kind of out there and very experimental, but also very bold, to include lyrically and consciously and spiritually as well, something that was also very bold and sending out messages which you think are important to you? Was that a major part of it?
Yeah, it was, because even when you think of, well, it's a thing that just being in the industry for a while and growing and trying to understand, who am I? Who's Black Hero? What am I here to do? What's the mission? What's the purpose? I started to realize the mere fact when you say the name Black Hero, it is connecting you to that past. No matter when you say it, the name is just like automatically you think of Marcus Garvey, and you think of Haile Selassie, and think of all these great legendary people. So it's like, for me, the immortal step up from Black Hero should include the stuff that makes Black Heroes who they are. Like, there should be messages. There should be fun. Yes, there should be positive vibes. There should be, oh, let's get high and have fun. But there definitely should be tracks that should make you aware of the situation that's happening. Like, make you aware of what people are going through, what Black people are going through, what Jamaicans are going through, like, what diaspora is going through, what. So it had to be done. That had to be said. Songs like Feet Don't Fear, Moving Out, Can I Show You, had to be there. You see me? They had to be there, because, and they're like, think of them like the medicine within the candy. So it's like, it's really not a lot, because this first project, I have a lot more music like that, but I decided that the first project, I wasn't going to make it heavily that. I just wanted to be this, like, a little medicine. So when you get older, because I start to realize music is a thing. As I get older, the more serious music I start to listen to more. When you're younger, you listen to all that catchy stuff and what they call a hit in the know. But 10 years from now, I'm still listening like Marvin Gaye and Michael Jackson. I'm not listening to what's hot 10 years ago in Jamaica. I'm still listening to the messages that apply to my life now. So when the kids reach a certain age, or when people reach that certain point in their life where they need to understand that, yeah, it's a system, policies are still here. Yeah, like, we're still in cane fields. Yeah, like, we're still mentally in a state of, like, oppression, like, spiritually, all this information flooding us. We're being distracted, confused, like, that's happening. Like, when you reach that point in your life, you're going to be like, now this song connects with me. Now feet connects with me. When you're feeling weak, you're like, oh, man, my feet feel like I'm going to give up. And you listen to feet like, oh, that's what he was saying. Oh, like, I get it now. Because that reached me a lot with music. Like, when we reach old, I'm like, that's him, that's it. Oh, man. So, yeah, that was purposeful. Like, I know this album, even me and my engineer said it the other day, it's like, no matter how many albums I make, no matter how better they are, I feel like this one is somehow, out of the blue, just gonna pop up as the one that was for me. Like, this is the one that defined me. You see me?
I think, yeah. No, I think so. And I love what you say about the medicine and the candy, because you have struck a perfect balance between putting out songs there which have deep meaning and deep messages, but also then sort of mixing it up with tracks which are just musically just like sublime and you want to listen to and enjoy, and whether it be bop your head because it's sort of funky soul, or kind of bash around the room because there's a hip-hop beat going on.
Think of the album like you go to a restaurant, isn't it, and you get a menu. So you can pick, choose, refuse what you don't like, what's for you. If you've never tried that food before, you always go to the restaurant and you see that, we've never tried that, I'm going to try that today. So that was the album. It was like, when each day, as the day, every day that you wake up, whatever you're feeling for, whatever your appetite is for, let's say today is not a herb day. Maybe today is just a very deep neo soul day and you want to listen to some like songs like that. They're there. So think of it like that. It's just like appetizer, main course, and, you know, dessert. Everything is here.
That is a brilliant analogy. I love it. I like what you were saying about, as I suppose, heroes of the sort of Black movement and Black music. There was a brilliant, you mentioned King Mass earlier, who's mutual friend, I take it, of ours. King Mass is absolutely brilliant, lovely guy, extremely talented artist as well. And on his Crown album, which dropped last month, brilliant track, which he did with Randy Jackson, Kabaka Pyramid, and someone else, definitely definition of a king, where he was talking about, in terms of sort of African spirituality, but also in his own mind, what people stood out for him throughout history as people who were essentially a definition of a king, who were spiritually and morally and consciously in tune and coming from the right place, but also therefore then what we can learn from these people. And a lot of King Massa's album was intertwined with both African spirituality and Rastafari beliefs. I mean, your own faith and your own spirituality, how big an influence was that over the Immortal Stepper as well? Because there's constant Rastafari references throughout it, and it does come across, but is that again a big influence for you? Is it important?
Yeah, definitely. Because initially coming into the music, it was all fun and games and everything, like just being as lyric as I can, trying to be like one of the best artists out there. But then over time, I met a very phenomenal woman called Maxine Stowe, which she's very pivotal, not only in black music worldwide in terms of this music, and just across the board, every black musician you can even think of. She's really pivotal in the Rastafari community here, over here, right at this point. She's the president of the Millennium Council. She's putting forward certain legislation and certain things that have really blown my mind, just to hear her story as somebody who could have easily just decided to, like, I'm just going to be rich and live the rest of my life and not do anything to contribute to the people. But she literally went out of her way, did that, is doing stuff to set up stuff for our children's children's children, isn't it? So meeting her and then learning from her, because there's so many Rastafarian people in the world, so a lot of people don't have the direct access to the knowledge. Some people are going off of their own feeling and stuff like that. And I was always scared of that. I don't want to follow someone's personal idea. I want to follow the true thing. So after meeting her and being on my own discovery for truth and stuff like that, when I met her, it's like, it just, everything made sense. To Rastafari, I really found myself. Like, at first, it wasn't even really about Haile Selassie. Like, discovering about, finding about him after was the key, but initially it was like the lifestyle. I want to be a positive individual in life. I want to live good. I want to eat good. I want to smoke good. I want to be able to tread this earth a different way. I don't want to be given into every single thing that the flesh is saying. Is it? I don't want to do every single thing. Is it me? That's out there. So Rastafari really gave me that. It's like a house. It's like a home. You can just be comfortable in and just be spiritual and be on that path, isn't it? But it's like Rastafari, there's not even a word, there's no way to really sum it up for me. It being in the album, once again, is just it coming out naturally, like it just seeping out into the project, like when I'm writing or how I'm singing, like it's just coming out. But personally, I take it very high in my mind. Rastafari, I put it to a different level, not how people look at it, like worshiping Haile Selassie as a god. And I don't put it like that. I put it as, this was the only way, or is the only way, for youths in the Caribbean or in the diaspora to access who they really are. And not from a European perspective or from an American perspective, but from an African perspective. Isn't it? The true explanation of what was happening to us and why is it happening to us. So yeah, man, Maxine and the Rastafari and community, they really embrace I am. Teach me little things. Like, I'm going to show you something I'm learning. Just to show you, just so people can understand what I mean. All this time, you ever hear people talk about, I tell is vital. It sounds catchy. Yeah, cool. Maxine was able to let me know the reason why Rastafari say I tell or live I tell is because spices have caused a lot of wars over the years. The fight for sugar, war for sugar, war for salt, all these things were real things that people used to, wars is the fight over salt that you buy in this grocery store right now. You don't even know that, like, sugar and sugar cane and plantations and slavery, like, there's a lot. So when I learned that, I realized, whoa, this is the place for, like, Rastafari is the community for me. Because just knowing that made a lot of sense now why you're here, Ital is vital. And it goes deeper than that, way deeper. I'm just showing, like, a small aspect of how powerful Rastafari is and how much they really mean what they say, like, I'm not going to use salt because you killed so many of my forefathers, my ancestors for this. I'm not going to use it. So they took a, you're taking a stance. And I love that. So it being in the album, and between me and you, because it's like a this is the first I'm saying it. Even the projects coming up, it's about to get really deeper into it, like into Rastafari, things I think people should know. But yeah, for the amount of step, just, as I said, medicine, they can't hint at it, make them get a feel for it. So when I make the full transition to, you know what I mean? Like that explosive content, it's not going to be like weird to them, like far out. It's going to be like, oh, he was already on that path.
That's really interesting you hear, because chatting to Indy Allen, that's again something he said, why he put a mixtape out first off this year, because he just wanted to give an introduction, if you like, to what he's about and his music, etc., etc., and then he's going to, as you say, sort of hit you with where you're really at. And I'm fascinated listening to you talk about, as you say, salt and spices and the historical context to things like that. I mean, it's similar with, you could go in like as far as cotton, really, couldn't you? The way,
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the way that hemp's never got anywhere because of the cotton industry, and the way that the use of hemp across society and the loads of uses you have for it was essentially oppressed because of the cotton industry, because of their domination of that market, if you like. So it's fascinating listening to you, really interesting. This is your break warning. Go and make yourself a tea, coffee, or whatever else you might like to relax with. And join me and Black Hero back here in a few seconds. I was chatting to an artist called Junior Morgan. I don't know if you know Junior Morgan. He's a proper roots artist that he's just released recently this year an EP called Hilltop. And I was talking to him about how things are in Jamaica, and he was saying that sort of society is quite, it's kind of split down two lines, really. You have people who are conscious and who are influenced by Rastafari faith and influenced by the revival movement, and then you sort of have the other side of society, which is more mainstreamed dance hall, influenced very much by the system and capitalism. Is that where your assessment of the situation in Jamaica is? Because I find, speaking to artists, that Jamaica is kind of like it's a little microscope on what's going on across the world more broadly, as it were. Yeah. I mean, what's your take on that?
I always said to people, I feel like if Jamaica ever finds its way to solve its problems, the world will literally change. I feel like it's just like exactly like the world, but it's on a smaller level. Like, out here, it's not even really much about racism. And worldwide, I'm starting to realize, as much as it's such a big topic and I know it's been going on for years, I feel the real root of all of that is still this classism. I just feel like it's just, that's what really it is in Jamaica. It's,
I'm cheering inwardly.
It's not sexism, it's not none of that. It's really class and where you are and who you grew up with, who you socialize with, what's going on. Sorry. In Jamaica right now, what I would say is happening in Jamaica is dancehall and reggae is like JLP and PMP. It's like this side and that side. It's like them and us. That's what it exactly is. Let me show you why. Dancehall is more corporate. Corporate people love dancehall and soca more. It's more marketable, you know, more Drake's and everybody's doing it now. And you know what I mean? So it's more like, yeah. The reggae side is more for the people. It's more art and culture and giving you a chance and being a sound of freedom, being a movement of freedom. So, but they're the same. So I said that to say they're the same. So JLP and PMP is the same. So the two political parties are the same. They just act like they're apart. So dancehall and reggae is the same, you know. It's just that they're acting like they're apart. So that's what creates the divide. Like whoever is in control of the media for dancehall is purposefully setting it that way, and purposefully setting reggae to be that way. So it's like we're being pitted against each other. Like the downtown people are being pitted against the uptown. It's just the same talk about class, like straight across the board. So what I find in Jamaica that's happening right now is more youth are gravitating towards the reggae side, but the mainstream plays more dancehall. So that's what you're getting mainstream is very poor content of music. It's not like back in the days. It's not like Bounce. It's not like the man them were used to say something. Remember, said dancehall come out of the streets, you know. It was like reggae was too polished at a point, so dancehall does that so real to tell you the real situations with ghetto people going through. People in the ghetto, in the projects, wherever you are, like, this was a song. It's like hip-hop rap. I mean, rap. Rap come out as a feeling of we have to speak our truth, because this pop rock and roll shit was not speaking the truth. So it's just like that with dancehall. Like, it was a point of you could listen to that and say, wow, this is what the people are really going through. It's not this white reggae. So, but now, I think like dancehall has been infiltrated to a level where the message is just Americanized. It's just straight, like niggas singing about VVS's and Balenciaga, like we can afford that in dancehall. No, an arcade we'll go buy, we'll cheap and clean and we'll knock off. I will still go see that. We cannot afford Balenciaga. So it's like the message I force the youth them for go rob and steal and kill. Because they present a lifestyle on a real to them. We're not talking about killing as fun when the youth them do that because they have to survive. When politicians are coming in your community and they're going for the fight against each other, it's survival. It's not for fun, bro. So I feel like the dancehall youth them just not seeing the thing that's going with them. They're being commercialized because they're singing foolishness. They don't realize once they stop, corporate won't be supporting you anymore, because then you'll be against their what they're saying. So that's what's happening in Jamaica. Now, if you is either you hold it out, is either you hold it and do the music that is positive, or as you realize, enough man, I can be like an alkaline and probably do anything for both, say anything within the music, or be like a next artist, so just do anything, legit, because corporate is telling you to do that negative stuff. So that's the divide in Jamaica, straight down the middle, either by party, by genre, or by class, really. But it's just classism, straight down the middle, straight down the middle, straight. Because, all right, Kabaka was trying to keep a show at this space in Jamaica, right? The government or the people are going to tell him that he cannot keep his show there. And this is Kabaka Pyramid, somebody that's taking the music worldwide, that's helping tourism. He's one of the big stream reggae revival. And then, after he moved the show, they gave the go-ahead for a soca dancehall party to be kept there instead. So that just supposed to show you what I'm talking about. Like, why wouldn't you want the positive reggae music right here? He's not cursing. He's not singing about anything negative. But you'd want these dudes there that are singing about our women in a certain way. So that's what I realize is going on. I don't have a specific word for it. It's just, all I can do is use the arts to show you an example of what's happening. Like, there's just a divide. And no matter how, especially me, that's what I wanted. I want to stop that divide. I want to, like, the genres need to mesh together. The artists need to be collaborating. The parties need to realize, like, it's no longer about JLP, PMP, this, that, because literally we're all going to suffer if you guys don't get it together, if we don't get it together as a genre, as a people. So I feel like classism is just the main thing across this whole universe, bro. It's really, I don't know if I can curse, but it's really fucking up the whole thing, bro. It's like, it's messing up everything. Like, it's damn, I get so passionate about it because I've been seeing it all my life. Like, the minute I put on locks, everything for me changed in life. Like, police never ever stopped me before me have locks. Now I get stopped on a regular. Even just having the locks and speaking like I'm talking, no. My mother, I get to you, but my mother grew me that sense for, yo, proper English, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? Our friends from overseas, so we reason with them, and we move that way, we reason that way, we talk that way, the path where they're there, but we have the English too. Me speaking English and having locks is like a wow thing in Jamaica. Like, whoa, we never know the rest of sense. Are you ridiculous? Are you crazy? Like, so, yeah. I'm going to go off, but that's what's happening in Jamaica. It's just classism. And as I said, if we find a way to sort that out, I feel like the world will legit change.
And that is exactly why Jamaica is kind of a bit of a microscope. Because you dropped the C-bomb several times in that, which is classism, which is a word that no one really wants to speak about in the UK. There's a few people who get it and say that that is actually the root of all our problems. But classism is, and I mean, it's something which, for me, it's okay, so it's the biggest problem we face in 2019 with regards to, as you say, corporations and the fact that we're divided. We're also fooled a lot of the time into being divided along lines of your skin colour, your religion, your sexuality, whatever, which I think is now it's got to the stage where it's an intentional trick by the system to split us up when we should be organising on class lines. But I mean, for me as well, the whole notion of classism, I mean, it stretches back throughout so much of human civilization anyway. I think it's we have a kind of species level problem in that we are so used to structuring our societies in these hierarchies where you have few people at the top telling everyone else what to do, and no one's worked out yet, well, that ain't really good for us. It's never really worked where you have a few people telling everyone else what to do, and that's I think it is the biggest problem, along with climate change, that we face as a species. But the fantastic insights on that, really fascinating what you were saying.
I'm gonna keep it real. Like, it has to be classism. It cannot be racism. I have, growing up, racism made me angry. It made me actually be very reluctant to talk to somebody of an ex skin color or anything. But growing up, after having so many friends across the world and white, black, purple, pink, no matter what color they are, I started to realize people is just people. Some black people treat me very horrible, but some white people treat me good, and vice versa. So it's not race then, it's people. It boils down to them, boils down to, in their mind, like their spirit, what's going on. So it has to be classism. It has to be some high horse thing going on. It has to be like someone thinks they're above and somebody thinks they're inferior. Like, it has to be that. It can be. I think it's fear out of the classism for, like, wow, black people are rising. Like, it's out of that. It's like out of that everything stems from, I believe. So I'm not saying racism and them things don't exist. It's just a byproduct. It's like a side effect of having classism, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to expand on something else that you touched on with regards to, you were saying about Kabaka, who couldn't do his show and then Dancehall was accepted. Just moving on to the revival movement on that kind of note, I mean, it's getting quite big at the minute. Obviously, Kabaka, who I hope is coming on the show in a couple of weeks, and he blew up last year. Protégé, who is on the show next week, obviously was nominated for a Grammy for A Matter of Time, and you've got Coffee kind of exploding across the world at the minute. Now, for me, in some respects, this is good. I like the fact that the revival movement is getting so big and more people are hearing it. It does concern me a bit that we might be seeing it kind of being a bit mainstreamed. And I mean, if you look at sort of what major artists are doing, I know Rihanna, for example, is releasing a reggae album this year. And it's a bit of a concern for me that it's going to get sucked up a bit by the corporate sort of music industry. But what are your thoughts on that? Do you think there's a risk that may happen?
It already has. And I think when you use with Protégé, them, they might explain it to you better. But I think that's a good thing. Because let's just be real. Like, the last time reggae went mainstream, like, shortly after that, I don't know why, but ridiculous amount of artists just died or just weren't professional or just weren't. Like, last time that happened, we didn't really get to go there and cement ourselves as, like, mainstream reggae. Like, we've always been this force by ourselves that connect to hippie and punk rock people and people across the world that just gravitate with what we've never been in mainstream long enough or sustained it long enough for us to say we are this for sure. Is it? So I don't think of it as a bad thing, but I am concerned too as well as to what I know of reggae revival, reasoning with Dottie Bookman, the man that coined that term, it wasn't really to define it as a genre. It was just to identify the scene, what was happening when they were coming up in music. It was just to show that these youths were on a different meds. They were getting themselves educated about Rastafari and then putting it in the music and making a push forward together as one. So they just coined the name for it to be easily marketed or easily understood, so that probably the older heads don't feel like these youths were trying to destroy reggae or anything. So it's not really a genre. So it's still reggae. They're still doing reggae. It's reggae. It's just a marketable thing. Now, Rihanna and them wanting to do that, let's just be real. I feel like they always wanted to do that. But you have to understand, like, the mainstream industry, the real industry that's out there that you hear every day, you as a big artist won't do something until you see it really trending like that. As a Rihanna, you're not about to just do reggae for it, like, because you wanted to. Ed Sheeran said you wanted to. Bob Marley's one of his biggest, like, he looks up to him. Like, it's obvious he plays the guitar and sings too and writes almost like him. So it's like, the influence is there, and he wanted to do it for so long, but now that it's popular, now that we have acts that are alive and able to stay in the mainstream for a little while, now that we have a presence that is able to perform 70-80 odd shows in America, Protégé, now that we have a duo, a song out there with 100 million views, now that we have these things there, as stats, now you're going to see that. You're going to see more artists want to do it and help us legitimize it even more as a mainstream. I want it to become mainstream. I want Jamaica to have a pool of income coming in from the eyes, from the music, because the people deserve it. It's the culture and the people that make the music what it is, make the artists who they are. So I want it to be mainstream. But just like you, I'm concerned that everything that every young youth does is going to be reggae vibe. No. That's where I'm not having that. It's not every young artist. Coffee is not reggae vibe. I don't care what nobody want to say. Coffee's influence, she said it, influenced by people like me, people like Royal Blue, people like Runkles, people like... she said when she started to pre the reggae revival, she loved it. But then when she went deeper, she really found herself after she started doing these different styles and the flows and the melodies and the genre bending. And I mean, so listen to her. She's not, a reggae revival. The young youths right now, reggae revival is at its apex. They're there. They're legitimate. They're there, bro. They're in Forbes. They're in this. They're in that. So it's our time now to come up and do a different thing. They made it possible for us to take the jam in different places, to open up different markets. It's not just Europe. It's not just these 10 shows over there that 100 artists need to be fighting for. No. So I think what Coffee is doing right now, I don't care what nobody wants. Let them shut up them all. Yeah, enough artists dead here. We've been doing it for a long time. And whoa, they're going to get signed. But you don't know what she's doing, bro. You don't know what's going on. She's amazing. Like, you can't tell me this girl no bad. And you can't tell me this girl is reggae revival and she's basically toasting and rapping and Sister Nancy and Supercat and using these new flows, isn't it? Like, so come on, isn't it? So I want them to legit. Coffee's our minutes, man. So that's why I don't want reggae revival. Take her and go on like this day. It's like, it's our minutes, man. Like, the blues and the Runkus Rivals and all these young artists that we've been here doing this for a while, this fusion thing that they used to call it, and now she's doing it effortlessly and on colors and all these things. That's our really smart. So she's gonna rape us, I feel like, that style. People are gonna be yearning, like, if she's like this, who else is doing this? But that's what it is.
You know what? Most people can't change my mind on my opinions. However, you have just made me think, yeah, actually, he's right about it going mainstream. You've changed my mind, yeah. You've sold your argument extremely well. And yeah, I hear you. I see where you're coming from. And it's fascinating.
I was always thinking that reggae should always stay for the people and stay. That's how it's going to stay real. It's not going to be infiltrated by... you know, the industry plans and stuff to the people like that, but just send me a vision and say, like, at the end of the day, if reggae doesn't go out there and really seed itself into mainstream, once again, it's just going to be a phase, and then we're going to wait 10 years again for this to happen again, and then 10 years again for this to happen again, and we're not going to go through the door every time. It's going to get harder and harder. So I think this time, even now, seeing everybody dropping albums, that's what I always wanted. That's why I don't have, like, a lot of music, or like super amounts of music, because I believe in albums. That's how I grew up on music, albums. And I mean, the singles, and the singles come off the albums. So the juggling thing wasn't my thing, right? So now I see the space is albums, EP, projects, bodies of work. That's how the mainstream is going to be able to judge us, to listen, to put us in what categories. And because some of us are doing urban contemporary music. That's just fact. Coffee is doing urban contemporary. I'm doing urban contemporary. But it's going to be reggae until we keep putting out bodies of work that make them say, oh, but damn, this is not just, this is a different, like, you know? So, yeah,
Exactly. It does, but urban contemporary does sum it up, and you certainly cannot say that yours is just a reggae album. I'm going to wrap this up. Obviously, the Immortal Stepper is out now. What else is in store for Black Hero this year? Are you going to be? Is there any touring on the cards? Anything coming up?
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah, for sure. But we're making a stop, a few stops in Canada. Then after that, I was waiting for it to be announced and stuff, but it was supposed to be opening for Inner Circle this year as well, and Michael Rose. So we're going to be on the road for a while. Now, I mean, but first stop is definitely in Canada. In April, we're going to be in Montreal for the community Black Art Festival, the first one and only Black Art Festival in Canada. And then from there, we're just going to be going up North America and just spreading the vibes, because the vibes has been building there, especially in California and different places. So it's just now to go there and bring our energy there and bring the presence and touch down and make the energy really be felt through the live performances and the interviews. You know what I mean? And yeah, so that's really what's up next. Music-wise, though, there's a lot more music coming out, a lot of collabs. UB40 will be dropping a collab with me and them and Nino Bantam as well. Also, there's a remix for Feet Don't Fail with Buju Bantam that's there, and a hard drive somewhere.
You got Buju?
Yeah, man. For Feet remix, you know?
He with that concert in Jamaica the other night. That was mad. Oh my gosh. That was
amazing. I've never seen that much people gather in Jamaica ever in my life. Ever in Jamaica. This is the first in my lifetime I've ever seen an artist use the stadium. So that's to show you how big it is. I'm in my 20s, bro. That's 20 at years. I've never seen that. I heard the last person that did that was Bunny Wheeler. So that's supposed to show you how long ago that was. So that was mind-blowing. I was on the stage, bro, when the 30,000 people put up their phones in the sky. I was like, that showed me how close my dreams were. That's what you want. You want to perform for that? That was great. That was a great show.
Well, look, I mean, you say that's how close your dreams are. I think the Immortal Stepper as a project, as a piece of work, should cement those dreams and should take you where you want to go. Like I said in the introduction and said throughout, it is an extraordinary piece of work. It showcases your talents both vocally and musically exceptionally well. It is fantastic, and I really hope it does extremely well for you. But moreover, I've so enjoyed chatting to you. It's really, really, you're fascinating, very interesting. It's just brilliant to speak to you, and I really hope the Immortal Stepper does good stuff for you. Black Hero, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been a real pleasure to chat to you.
Yeah, man, it's my pleasure. And it's best of the whole podcast family, everybody. It's a really honor to be here. Please, man, talk about the album. And yeah, man, like, going forward, when I'm part of the family, so all projects email and I'll get it first, everything. So,
bless up. Thank you so much. Black Hero, thank you.
All right, bless and love.
How amazing is Black Hero? Isn't he one of the most fascinating people you've ever listened to? He's an absolute star, musically, but philosophically as well. And here is one of my favourite tracks from his album, The Immortal Stepper. It is Can I Show Ya? Here it is, Can I Show Ya by Black Hero.
Since they can't stop me now, they can't hold me down. Hero again, oh, hero again, oh, oh. Can I show ya? Them have to come better when it comes to depression. Man, and up is no beginner, man. Just say we no lose, so we have to be the winner, man. My words come to save, every sinner, man. So, yo, know the truth, yeah, we bitter like Cersei, no cinnamon. Eyes on the price, so you no cinnamon. Mama in a grave, and the food is a feed. So, you can't forget the team, wide awake, living the dream. Oh, yeah, and things better now. Better now, but the days, I mean, fact. When me never have much, and mama fry the chicken back. Never snap on its sprat, and she never. I'm not cooking as you fry the chicken fast. Oh, yeah. And they say I always speak up fast. God knows. Come to the ghetto if you think I lied. To summarize, just bring your eyes up. Can I shine? Yo, I'm pleased.
years for the youths with the grease in on the corner. Yeah. And I always found God and the farms with marijuana. And when the top broke on, you're the last of all the farmer. Now in comes the karma, your repatriation. Them I get it however for worse or for better. The dollar, the nearer, the mula, the cheddar. Some said them at the point of giving up, it's giving up. Some said them can't do no better, no better. Some said them a try, yo, we every day, in every way, in every endeavor. Improving smart and clever. Selling the plants like an umbrella. Just the weather, any weather, your setup comes to measure. Oh, oh.
They can't stop me now. They can't hold me down. They won't just. They won't, they won't. They can't stop us down. They can't hold us down. They won't, they won't. They won't, they won't. Can I shine?
Yo, I'm pleased for the youth with the grease in on the corner. And that's it. This very special edition of Soulful Uncaged is done. I'd like to thank my fantastic guest, Incredible Black Hero. Follow him on Twitter. It's BLVKH3RO. As always, behind the scenes, thank you to the love of my life, the gorgeous Nicola Jeffrey. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Nicola C. Jeffrey. My man in the booth, sound engineer Gav Paws. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Paws with a Z Radio. And my in-house singer, it's Ray Star Music. Follow her on Twitter. It's at Ray underscore Star 113. Thank you to the Canary for uncaging me. I will see you very soon.
Uncaged.